Oh, you doing all right? You with us?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Not too tired? You with me?
Yeah,
Raining?
With you.
Hello and welcome back to Relatively Football, the premier women's football podcast hosted by Blood Siblings. Although we love non-blood siblings
intense,
too.
Intense way to start it. Very intense.
Yeah, let me dial it back there. You know, we're all about family, chosen family, real family, football family, community, and the beautiful game. My name is Theo Lloyd Hughes, and I'm here with my sister Flo. We're both a bit croaky. We're both a bit tired, and it is raining in London and New Orleans. Look at that for symmetry. How you doing, Flo?
Yeah, like you hinted at. Very tired after a hectic week of WOSO and football in general, but the season is winding down a little bit now. Just that game on Thursday between Chelsea and Everton really is the focus, and then Team GB squad will come out and then we'll talk about that for a bit, and then we've really got nothing until the Olympics in July here, but obviously NWSL is just starting its season now. But yeah, it's been a crazy couple of days.
Well, let's get to it. I really want to hear about your day yesterday because, I mean, I think you did an amazing job and have obviously been doing so much great work with TalkSport and putting more and more stuff together to get coverage and fun bits for fans, different types of analysis, different types of voices involved. So, I thought yesterday was a great day for a lot of that. It was not the best 90 minutes, I think, from a viewer's perspective or from a drama perspective, but it was a fantastic 90 minutes of football, especially if you're a Barcelona fan, and a great event where it felt like there were so many people tuning in to watch elite women's football, and that was a really great sign. So many people I know watched that final, and I love that. So yeah, it finished FC Barcelona 4 Chelsea 0, and it was 4 goals in the first 36 minutes. The first two were a bit chaotic and maybe a tad lucky. Melanie Leupold scoring an own goal, kind of like I've never seen before, with a chaotic deflection, a contentious penalty, which did get a VAR check, and then two absolutely fabulous quintessential Barcelona goals bursting through the Chelsea defence with fabulous runs and passes and rapid movement from Bon Mati and Caroline Graham Hansen. Flo, take me through your day and take me through how you felt about the final.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there wasn't drama across the 90 minutes, but the first 5-10 minutes were very dramatic. That freak own goal, which was bizarre. And I think it's also funny thinking about that Bayern Munich first leg where Leupold scored a goal that came off her face. And then this happening now, it's a funny one. I've spent a lot of the season talking about how it was sort of written in the stars that Chelsea were going to win the Champions League this season. And there were lots of things that pointed towards luck going their way. And it did feel like, and I'm not the first person to make this point, but it did feel like last night all the luck just kind of evaporated in the space of like 5 minutes. First goal, yeah, was just a weird freak accident. And that didn't set Chelsea off on the right tone because they were already a bag of nerves. I mean, the players were just running around like deer in the headlights. And then so to concede, you're on top of your existing nerves is even worse. Penalty, I think it was harsh, but I know other people think, you know, that's a pen. I think that was harsh. And then to go 2-0 down against a side like Barcelona, you got no chance really. I did think that Chelsea was going to be tough for Chelsea to win. So even if, you know, get rid of the freak goals, would they have won? Probably not. But the fact is, they just never gave themselves a chance. I also think Emma Hayes was a little bit naive. I don't think it was the right decision to stick with the team that played against Barcelona. You know, I'm a huge Jess Carter stan, so I love her. But she
love Neve Charles too.
Love Neve Charles too, but both of them were suspect last night. And they were targeted by Barcelona's players. And G and Sophie Ingle might as well have not existed. Ingle barely remembered she was on the pitch, and G barely touched the ball. So all round, I think the shape was wrong, and I think in terms of the personnel, didn't put the best team on the pitch. I think even though Jonna Anderson is the weakest player in what traditionally has been Chelsea's starting 11, she's still a natural left back, and playing her and Blundell on the flanks might have been a better option than Carter and Charles, who just looked a bit lost last night.
I think it's easy to criticise the fullbacks. They had tough games. You look at the third and fourth goal. They come from the wide areas. I think you've got to remember that, like, Lika Martins, you know, Caroline Graham-Hampson are two of the best, if not the best, sort of wide attackers in the world. And I felt like from watching the PSG game, those players causing so many problems.
I mean, they're like, the fact that Hayes wanted to go with two players who aren't playing in necessarily their favoured positions is a bit of a risk.
Or haven't played that much this season.
It's a bit of a risk.
I like the decision. I think you're right, it's a risk, but I like the decision. I think we've both been so complimentary of Neve Charles. Jess Carter's maybe had more of an up and down season, but has looked great, especially as a set piece option recently. So I didn't really have a problem with the fullbacks. I'm not saying they had good games, but I think they'll learn from this. I think it's going to be an amazing thing to have done to be Neve Charles in your first season at Chelsea and to be starting in a Champions League final. So I think I want to praise Emma Hayes for maybe being bold there. I think the decisions that I would maybe be more critical of, and you kind of touched on it at the end there, is Sophie Ingle had another tough game, kind of being right in the middle of the pitch, being the muscle, along with Leupolz, who was kind of more to the right-hand side. And I think she got really lost, and that's where you needed Chelsea to kind of dig in, and G as well, and maybe we should have seen Erin Cuthbert start.
Jessie Parker-Humphreys, big Chelsea fan. We've been sort of debriefing today, going through the traumatic, hungover Jessie, trying to sort of go through the motions of the game. And Jessie was pretty sort of adamant that, you know, if Wrighton and Cuthbert, who would have provided more muscle in the midfield, which was much needed because Chelsea were overwhelmed physically, that it could have been a different story in parts and sections of the game and areas on the pitch. Who knows, you know, how much that would have changed the outcome in those two big game-changing incidents. But at the same time, yeah, I think they looked really soft. And I hate using that word soft because it just brings up, you know, horrible connotations about sort of like toxic masculinity. But I do think they looked like they couldn't hold their own in the midfield.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily know about Wrighton, but I definitely think it would have been a good option. I would like to have seen maybe Leupolz, Kirby and Cuthbert as a potential sort of midfield three that you could have had, trying to get more on the ball and in the muscle, kind of winning the ball back against Puteas and Hamraoui and Bonmati. And I feel like that would have been maybe where Chelsea could have done better, because I think they really lost some of that weight. And then once you get out wide, you know, the fullbacks were exposed.
Yeah, no, I wanted to ask what you thought in terms of if those two mad incidents hadn't happened in the first 5 minutes, where would you have seen the game going? Because I think when you take yourself out of the English football bubble, which we all get lost in the sauce, and I think, you know, the fact that TalkSport wanted to make a huge deal of this game, I think going into the office today, people were quite shocked about the result. And I think, you know, lots of people who watch Barcelona would have seen this coming, and we've been told this, and those of us who've watched Pockets were kind of aware that, you know, it's not going to be as easy as a lot of other people think. So do you personally think that, take away those two goals, Barcelona still would have like smashed Chelsea even if the scoreline hadn't been so huge? Or do you think actually it was just an absolute horror for Chelsea all round and they wouldn't have had a chance?
Would have thought Barcelona were going to win this game. I've kind of thought Barcelona were a Champions League favourite for a while. You know, 26 wins out of 26 in the league kind of speaks for itself in regards to greatness. And
the way they tore apart City, right, was probably, for English people, a bit of a wake-up call.
I was going to say, we had this a few weeks ago where we were like, oh, you know, does the English media, the world media cover the WSL too much? And there's definitely something there, because, you know, I think the quality of Barcelona is definitely underrated, and that's why I would you know, really recommend following people like Soph Lawson, who have written about European women's football for a long time and spent a lot of time with this Barcelona team. Box to Box, WSL, like we said, Abdullah, you know, Alex Ibisita and Jesse, you know, keep shouting out these great voices. But I'd never thought it was going to be 4-0.
No.
You know, I never, and to be honest, Flo, like, let's pull back from the scoreline. It could have been 6 or 7, you know.
Yeah,
there's
many
chances.
Yeah, the Oshuala goal that got ruled out at the end.
Yeah, Oshuala should have had a goal. I think it was either Lika Martins or Puteas had one off the bar. Like, you know, Barcelona was so good that I think you either have to sit back and say, we underestimated how good this Barcelona team is in regards to maybe being the greatest team of all time we've ever seen in the UEFA Women's Champions League, or the gap between Barcelona and top sides like Chelsea is greater than we thought, or Chelsea had a really bad day at the office. Personally, I think it's sort of a combination of all three.
Yeah.
I think Barcelona are really, really that good. I never thought they would smash Chelsea this hard, so I think the gap is bigger than I thought. I probably would have had this game down as a 2-1, 3-1 win to Barcelona, yeah, as a prediction.
Yeah.
So I was shocked to see it go the way it did, because like I said, I think even if you remove those freak goals, I haven't seen any XG numbers or anything, but this game probably would have been 3-0 or 4-0 would have been the XG. My XG guess might have been like 3.2 to 0.8 or something. So I think that it was still very one-sided, even without those freak goals or the kind of harsh penalty. But I think, yeah, the gap is pretty big, and it will be interesting to see how Barcelona turn this into something like a dynasty moving forward. I think, yeah, like I said, more people who have watched them more and have more expertise have said this team has been a long time in the making, and it's about the small tweaks here and there. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if they can kind of keep that going.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are signs definitely of a bit of a domination coming. Also, is this the start of a like amazing rivalry between Barca and Chelsea? I mean, like Wolfsburg for a period of time, and maybe to an extent Lyon as well, became this hurdle that Chelsea were, you know, couldn't get over. And that win against Wolfsburg in the quarterfinal felt like such a seminal moment. But it's almost like, was that the real quiz all along? Obviously not. But what I mean is, like, so much of that, the energy was put into that and the semi-final win as well, that going beyond that was almost like too much. Or going beyond that, they'd lost a sense of how far other teams had progressed as well. I mean, I'm not necessarily accusing Chelsea of not doing their homework, but I do think there was some naivety there, or maybe not necessarily realising how good Barcelona were in comparison to the teams that they'd faced along the way. And Atletico Madrid, I mean, they could have knocked Chelsea out in the round of 16. So Chelsea were on the brink the whole time. And also, those games against Bayern Munich manager, and I think to an extent Emma Hayes in some ways, Bayern Munich, you know, they said that Bayern Munich were the better team across those two legs, and Chelsea were extremely clinical and finished all their opportunities. We didn't see any of that last night. So I think, you know, there's so much around it where you're like, right, is this the furthest Chelsea are going to get for a while, and Barcelona are going to be this hurdle that they're going to struggle against for years to come? Or next year, years to come, Chelsea are going to come back harder, faster, stronger. And, you know, it's not just going to be a Barcelona dynasty now for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think, again, this might be my patented English loser mentality, but I kind of feel like they'll grow from this. And I feel like Chelsea are better off for getting to the Champions League final. You're better off for getting smashed. And you learn from it. You know, Barcelona have been to the Champions League final. They've been smashed. They've learned from it. They got a chip on their shoulder. They made the tweaks. They grew. And I think that's what we're going to see from Chelsea. And I think that's what I want to see from loads of European clubs. You know, Bayern Munich had those two legs against Chelsea where they were pretty good and their game plan worked for a lot of the time, but they couldn't get the ball over the line. And then they got pinged in, you know, crucial take your chances moments. And I'm sure Bayern Munich are sitting there watching those two Chelsea legs thinking, you know, what could we have done right? So I think growth learning from your errors, being in these matches is what you want to do. And I don't think Emma Hayes will have any regrets. I don't think she'll think, oh, well, if only... I mean, maybe she's sitting there thinking, if only we'd started Erin Cuthbert, if only we'd been more combative and
well,
maybe
had...
Well,
you know, Maren Mjelde, if Jenna got injured, that's a big what if.
Yeah, but again, you can't... I just don't think you can really lament in something like a big injury.
Yeah.
Thinking maybe on the more positive side of how good this Barcelona team is, Flo, we have for a long time been celebrating anyone but Lyon, and not having Lyon in the final, having a new winner. How good did you enjoy not seeing Lyon lift the Champions League final? Anyone from this team particularly stand out? My two standouts for me is Hamraoui in the midfield, who ran the show yesterday. You know, obviously Lika Martins and Graham Hansen will get a lot of attention for their skills. But I love Hamraoui. She's kind of been on and off in regards to starting in this team in the latter stage of the Champions League. But such a fantastic player who I think embodies so much of what they did right yesterday in regards to their kind of rapid burst and intensity and skill and movement on and off the ball.
Yeah. I completely agree with all the players that you mentioned there. I think Puteas, is that how you pronounce it? Alex is going to be disappointed. But I think that's it, because two L's is a Y, isn't it? So Puteas, who I know Alex has been saying is kind of so key to Barcelona, and she was fantastic last night and proved why it was so important that she did play in the game, because there were concerns about whether she was going to be fit enough, I think. So, yeah, I think she was crucial last night. Like you mentioned, Graham Hansen, Lika Martins, Hermoso as well, was just such a physical presence that just caused a lot of problems, I think, really. I think they just have so much physicality, but also are so technical. And that is an absolute deadly combination. And I think England as a whole, I know we've talked about Spain now being like halfway between underdogs and favourites for the Euros, but I think there's signs of that with England. Like, England have what it takes to be a very technical and very physical side. Like, they've been set up perfectly, they've been given everything they need to become that sort of side. But what we haven't yet got is the culture and the identity that comes so easily with Spanish football, especially the Barcelona culture. And I think you just see how much that's had a positive impact on Barcelona watching them last night. It's just seamless, really. The movement, the understanding. We've talked about Kirby and Kerr and the telepathy that they have, but Barcelona's basically like 10 players who are all telepathic. The movement is just... Like, when I was watching them last night, I felt like, you know, they've got extra players on the pitch, because at times they were just overwhelming Chelsea. Entirely think, no, surely they've got extra players here, because how are Chelsea just not picking up any of these runs or being so late to track any single runner? But that's just how good their movement is. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, you know, obviously people have been talking about Spain for a while, and I think that She Believes Cup last year was a real kind of like, oh, wow, you know.
Coming out party
more to the US and UK women's football people, sure. And this is like the rubber stamp. Like, we're coming to get you. Euros next year. It's not going to be an English party. Spain are coming to be party poopers.
There you have it. If England weren't hosting, would we even qualify for our own European tournament? Well, yeah, congratulations, FC Barcelona fans. I did love the Jesse JPH, Alex Ibiceta, drink-a-thon, bingo cards. I love that. It's great to see people coming together safely, and as we move through these weird, weird times, to be able to watch football again. I love it. I love to see it. Flo, I know you're hosting a now sold-out European football watch party as well. What's that about?
Yeah, some bloke called Michael bought 8 tickets, and now I'm like, oh, should I put
sus.
Should I put a cap on that? I forgot that people might buy more than a couple of tickets, so... Michael, whoever you are, thanks. The money's going to charity, so I hope you do turn up. But yeah, I'm doing a screening for England-Scotland on Friday the 18th at kickoff's 8 p.m. I'm doing a screening at the book club in Shoreditch. It is sold out, but I mean, no.
Will there be another one? Another one
I
on
hope
the horizon?
So. Depends how well England do. So, you know, don't hold your breath. But if Michael hand back some of those tickets, those 8 tickets that he bought, then I'm sure they'll be returned close to the time if people are interested in coming. But yeah, it's sold out for now. But yeah, hopefully more games on the horizon. I am also planning an event for Team GB Japan on the 24th of July. So I'm just waiting to find a venue. So keep your eyes peeled for that one.
Massive, absolutely massive. I forget what the time difference is going to be on that. I'm still figuring out how I'm going to be watching games in Japan, but that's for another podcast listener. So heading over the Atlantic from Stockholm, where where Barcelona lifted the UEFA Women's Champions League, we had a big weekend in the United States of America. The NWSL regular season finally got underway after 2 years and 1 month away. We've had a Challenge Cup, another Challenge Cup, and a full series, but the NWSL season is back flow. 5 games in the NWSL, 10 teams, Hallo Racing Louisville, welcome to the party. They kicked everything off on Saturday afternoon with a beautiful 0-0 with Kansas City NWSL. Then we went down to New Jersey, where New York, New Jersey, Gotham opened up their first ever game at Red Bull Arena and beat the Houston Dash 1-0. OL Reign then played another 0-0 with North Carolina at home on the late NWSL After Dark game. The goals started to return with Orlando Pride yesterday, getting a 1-1 draw at Washington Spirit. 2 late goals there, one from Alex Morgan and a really amazing header from Ashley Hatch. And then Portland Thorns said, you know what, this league is ours for the taking. Here's a statement win. Bosch 5-0 against Chicago Red Stars, who seem to be a team maybe lots of people are tipping to struggle this season. And that was your NWSL weekend. Flo, what jumps out to you?
I'm a huge Orlando Pride stan.
Wow. Every week it changes. I feel like it's a different team.
I obviously have a Thorns shirt. I really do like the Orlando kit, but I've started following Tony Presley. And
as you should, Girls Gone Veg.
Yeah, and I had followed Ali Riley for a while, but I feel like the content's really gone up a notch. And Marta's Instagram is also hilarious. She's a great follow as well, because she's just like talking in Portuguese to her dogs all the time and like playing the ukulele. It's good content. So I think I'm just like, all of them have been very active on social media, and obviously like Ashton Harris, Ellie Krieger, we love them.
Four mums in the team. You love
so
to
many
see
mums.
It.
Mums. I'm such a Sydney LaRue stan, and all the spawn she does, I'm obsessed with it. So I just like, there's been so much content around from all of them at the moment. I guess because I think they're sort of out of lockdown, but they seem to be posting a lot, all of them. Anyway.
Florida, mate. It's a Florida thing.
Yeah, I'm just really on this Pride hype train, and I do want Mark Skinner to do well. So I'm kind of egging them on that way. The kit's great. And, you know, there's all these sort of aging stars that you want to see do well. Like, you want Marta to do well. And I'm just loving the vibes. So yeah, I want them to have a good season, and also the fact that they've just been surrounded by chaos and being quite bad for a while. I'm like, okay, let's turn that around. You've got a cool kit. It'd be good if you could play well as well. I think they're doing some great stuff in the community. Those t-shirts that they wore yesterday, I thought that was a really nice touch. And yeah, I'm here for it. And their social media team is great. Good content coming out.
Yeah, there was a lot of great support for Sarah Gordon, and a lot of conversation around kind of giving more voice to the Black Women's Player Collective, supporting Black women in soccer spaces, in all spaces. So that was really cool to see. I know up in New Jersey, Cloud9 did a lot. Orlando, I think up in Louisville as well, there was a lot of stuff going on. So that was really cool.
Give us the relative logistics of New Jersey.
Big weekend for me, traveling up, doing my first ever away game coverage for the Striker Texas.
Relatively on tour.
It was relatively on tour. Yeah, it's kind of amazing. You know, I've been trying to talk to a lot of people about whether or not a non-local media soccer outlet has ever sent a writer on the road before, and we couldn't really get any answers, or at least not in Texas anymore. I'm sure it's been much more similar in the Northwest and the Northeast for kind of footy coverage in the United States, but it's pretty unprecedented down in Texas. And yeah, it was a really privileged position to be in. It was a really amazing trip. But it was great to spend some time with the Houston Dash team on the road, and meeting some of the operations and comms people was really great.
Any goss? Rachel Daly, what's she up to?
Nothing I can say live on air. Everything is off the record.
Once we stop recording, give me the goss.
Yeah, I'll give you the goss off the record. Yeah, you got to be professional. But yeah, it was great. New Jersey's kind of funny. I think I'm going to write something about this, but it's interesting. And obviously it was only Gotham's first game at Red Bull Arena, but it's interesting to go to a stadium where you wouldn't know the women are playing.
Mm. As in there's none of their like banners, like what would they call it? Collateral, you know, like signage.
Ephemera.
You know, like there's not really any Gotham signage, you mean, or like banners or...
I didn't see a single Gotham sign right. outside of the electronic sponsor boards right, that right. had at not Andre Carlisle's fantastic year meme. Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful stadium. It's an elite footy stadium. It's elite, you know, great grass, great everything. But
it's not theirs.
It's not theirs. And it made me think how privileged it is to walk up to BBVA Stadium in Houston and have a 20-foot mural of Rachel Daly. And the club badges are right.
You'd love that on any day, 20-foot mural of Rachel Daly.
I'd put that in downtown New Orleans. I'd put that in downtown York, you know, put that in Leeds.
Put that in Finsbury Park outside the Emirates.
I guess my point is just, no, but even like, let's talk about the Emirates. Like, is how much, I know they share the same badge, so it's slightly different, but how much signage?
So,
photos, billboards you see of women.
Because Arsenal are basically like Merch FC and Adidas released like 8 kits a season with them.
I didn't even know they played football. I thought they were just a fashion one.
Literally. There's actually quite a lot of signage because by the club shop and stuff, they have massive pictures of Kim Little, Leah Williamson, Jill Roard might have been on one of them. But yeah, there's actually quite big signage of them because they just have to sell so much merch, so they're like kind of used as models, like the men's team. But it's quite nice, yeah. They're not kind of completely silent.
Well, anyway, back to my point. It's just I want to see, and this is, you know, what I'm trying to do with the Dash and covering them and getting support from the people I work for to try and cover them more and get more coverage and more content and build stories and build community and get the fans going, because I do think the Dash are in a privileged position to have parity when it comes to like visibility and promotion in the city of Houston alongside the men's team, and that's really cool. And I think, you know, Gotham are running an amazing operation up there. I think one of my favorite things was meeting Tiana from the Gotham comms, absolutely legendary person who had so much cool stuff to say. We were swapping stories about, you know, old NWSL, old Sky Blue, blah blah blah, and they were so excited to see Gotham walk out of Red Bull Arena yesterday. And I think of people like that who've worked for the club and done amazing work and are seeing the team grow, and you want to see the NWSL grow, you want to see women supported and put on a great platform. And in my head, Houston have a bit of a head start when you look at teams like Gotham who are only getting there now. And, you know, I want to see the same thing for down in Houston. So it's a little bit of a kind of observation, and it's also a little bit of a challenge to see the people of Houston, you know, really get behind this team. And I know there's lots of barriers there in regards to, you know, lots of different things. But yeah, that was one thing that really took away. On the pitch, Flo, a bit of a bingo card this one. Daniel Chesky was refereeing the game. So yeah, bit of a spicy one. There was a head injury to Mitch Purse.
I'm out of touch with this NWSL banter. Are they renowned dodgy ref?
They are the number one dodgy ref.
Okay.
And they were handed the...
They're like the Mike Dean of the NWSL world.
No, not even. Like, I can't really put my head on it. Like, they just don't really give a toss who gets hurt.
It's carnage.
There was a bit where Midge...
It's like
Midge
WWE
Purse,
sort of refereeing.
Yes, exactly. Midge Purse and Jane Campbell slammed into each other.
Oh, I heard about this, yeah.
I couldn't really see it from where I was sitting in the press area. I saw it, but I couldn't really see like who hit who. And I know Midge was pretty kind in the post-match to say, you know, we just ran into each other. But it was more so that Daniel Chesky just let play go on.
Yeah.
You know, Jane Campbell was on the ground. Midge Purse was on the ground. It looked like it was a head injury. Looked like
yeah,
they just
that was pretty
heads.
Basic.
It was pretty basic. Just blow your whistle, yeah. Make sure everyone's all right. And she really didn't give a toss. I did love the... There was a person behind me, so this is probably a real highlight, who shouted, I can't remember how rude it was, but they kind of shouted out Daniel Chesky by name and said, like, you know, bugger off, Danielle, or whatever. Might have been ruder than that.
Obviously, having been going to football matches so long, like, I'm so used to, like, expletives being shouted at the referee, but in a US context, I just can't imagine it, but...
I want to give the New Jersey Gotham fans a bit of credit. They were a bit spicy. I think, you know, we saw more dodgy scenes at the anthem. Why are they still playing the anthem? Why are Jane Campbell and Carly Lloyd still standing up, etc.? And Carly Lloyd's a, you know, biggest cheer of the night. Everyone bloody loves Carly Lloyd. Song after song about Carly Lloyd. I mean, it was
really
like a Carly
what?
Lloyd.
Carly Lloyd's blue army.
No, it was like Carly, dale, dale, Carly,
oh,
something like that.
Boo.
Anyway, I'm not really one.
Is this
one
your
for the songs,
is this your queen?
I'll give Gotham some credit for the amount of abuse they gave the ref, and it reminded me a little bit of the Dash game a few weeks ago, where like the boos when the ref gets a decision wrong. I thought Midge Purse should have had a penalty in the first half. We didn't get replays in the stadium, so I didn't see it twice. I've watched the game back, and it, you know, maybe it wasn't a pen, but I thought it was a pen at the time. And the fans, that was like the biggest cheer of the night, was the boos. But aside from, you know, the stadium and the bad refereeing, the highlight of the game was seeing Midge Purse IRL. Absolutely amazing skill to get it past Alicia Chapman and finish. And that moment, the silence and then the cheer after Midge scored, it had all the hairs on my arm up, and it reminds you of, again, I say, we feel like we say this a lot, but why you watch the game is for moments like that. Absolute moment of brilliance for Midge Purse, who's really putting herself out there as one of the kind of stars of the NWSL 2021. And I loved it. I just thought that moment made me continue to fall back in love with football. So thank you, Midge. From a Dash perspective, I think, you know, this result is going to age well, would be my positive takeaway for Dash fans. I think a 1-0 loss away to Gotham isn't a bad result. And in October, at the end of the season, I think there'll be a lot of teams who've gone there and done worse. So, you know, the Dash also had like 20 shots. Rachel Daly very nearly scored after rounding the keeper and not being able to get a shot off. She had a couple of flicks that nearly went in. I think she had 9 shots on the day, Daly. So the Dash were really trying. They really fought. They really tried to make it work. And, you know, sometimes it's just not your day. I think it was a lot closer game than the score. I mean, obviously the score said it was close, but I think it could have, it was maybe more like a 1-1 or a 2-2 sort of game. And, you know, things just weren't really going in for either side. Big shout out to Mandy Freeman, though. She had a great Challenge Cup final, was absolutely fantastic against the Dash, getting her body on the line and being very sensible with the way she was watching players' runs and getting in blocks. And I think it was a bad game for Shay Groom, and I think Mandy Freeman deserves a lot of credit for frustrating Shay Groom. Anything else on the NWSL, Flo? I think we need to talk about, before we get out of here, it's obviously been such a busy week.
Why don't we quickly just touch on Lavelle and Mewis confirmed today.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and Ebony Salmon.
And Ebony Salmon as well.
That's
God,
what
there's
I
been a
talk
lot of
about.
News.
I know. Listener, I'm going to tell you right now, it's okay to feel tired. It's okay to not feel like you've got time to cover everything. It is a capitalist ideal that you need to keep being productive and you cannot rest, because rest is good. Everyone deserves love. Everyone deserves rest. It's okay to not be able to cope with all the news right now. And as I say that, this morning, Sam Mewis and Rose Lavelle have been confirmed coming back to the NWSL. Hashtag RIP the WSL.
I'm not that bothered about Lavelle, but I am gutted about Mewis, because I think she had such a big impact on the league and there was so much more to come that I had visions of her really, really having a huge impact on City and winning a bunch of trophies with them. So I'm a tad gutted. I suppose she did get the FA Cup, the 1920 FA Cup. But yeah, I am a bit disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's a huge boost for the North Carolina Courage, who I think really are kind of putting themselves back in the conversation as being one of the teams, maybe one of the top three teams in the league,
and
to try
poor,
and take home the championship this
poor
year.
Poor Abby Del Kemper came over.
I know.
And everyone's like, oh, bye, Abby.
She's lost her mate.
What? Oh, what? Oh, no, I signed a two-year deal, guys.
Anyway. Yeah, her boyfriend's done his ACL, though, so maybe he'll fly over.
Yeah.
Best case. I mean, I'm sorry about your ACL, mate, but I don't know. Maybe you can move to Manchester for your rehab. Moving on to Ebony Salmon. Flo, this was huge for me. Something we talked about a lot about Ebony Salmon maybe going to the NWSL and or where would she sign in the WSL. So what did this move mean to you? And then I'll talk a little bit about being on a press call with her when she was unveiled in Louisville.
Well, Louisville is like Freedom FC. We've got Ebony Salmon and Gemma Bonner being let loose.
Let's go.
Yeah, just like the Gemma Bonner move, I'm really happy for her. I think it's a great step. I think it'll be really good for her development. I think I thought she was going to go to WSL side. You called it and you totally got it right. And I'm really excited to see how she does.
Well, I did say Chicago. Yeah, I do apologize. Chicago Red Stars fans. I thought this one was going to go your way. And to be honest, you could really do with Ebony Salmon right
You're
now.
You're desperate. But I'm really excited also about how many people are hyped to see her in the league. I think that's great because she's clearly, you know, causing a stir in a positive way. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think Louisville, I mean, that kit, some of the players they've got, I'm here for it. I'm definitely gonna buy a kit now. I was thinking about it before, but it's definitely happening now.
Yeah, you and me could get matching Bonner and Salmon racing
yes,
Louisville
oh
kits.
Oh my god, I love it.
Siblings forever. Yeah, I think, you know, I haven't, I think you were saying you interviewed or did some media stuff with Salmon a couple of years ago.
Yeah, very shy. Very, very shy.
Yeah, I was going to say it's one of the biggest takeaways for me. I think she is a player. When so much of women's football right now, all football really, happens online, I think you forget sometimes the human beings and what they're like. And I would argue Emily Salmon's become one of the most like exciting, hyped up young players in England. And talking to her in virtual real life, it was like, oh my god, this person is an actual 20-year-old who's very down to earth, very polite, very nice, just kind of getting on with things, isn't necessarily this hyped up super athlete. Especially I think the Americans tend to be better at being more hyped up and kind of wonderfully arrogant and determined and loud. So Ebony Salmon's an interesting player to move over. You know, she's not Rachel Daly, she's not vocal and aggressive. I think it's going to be an interesting move for her. She's obviously very young, but I think she has such an amazing record in the WSL and is such an exciting player and has only played for teams that have struggled, albeit obviously Racing Louisville, we don't really know what they're going to be like in the NWSL, but it is a league with better parity than the WSL. So I'm really excited to see her play. And I guess my big takeaway from being on the call with her was she'd never heard of the place Louisville, which I think is such a funny anecdote. And I'm really excited to see how she takes to the city and the culture. And then secondly, it was kind of interesting to see how Christy Holly, the manager, I've just never seen anyone look more pleased than when he was unveiling her and was talking about the way she plays and how excited he was that Racing Louisville had signed them.
Yeah, and also just another, I know we've talked before about how bizarre the NWSL sort of format is for us as people used to English football, but Jesse brought to my attention the fact that he hasn't even been able to make contact with two players he drafted in Press and Heath. I mean, that is just weird. The fact you can't even talk to them. That is so strange.
One of the local journalists, one of the Kentucky people asked, they were like, oh, any updates on Tobin and Kristen coming down and playing for Racing? And he was like, we've tried.
You can't, but what do you mean you can't even get through? That's what's so weird. Can you imagine basically signing someone and they just don't pick up your phone calls? That is so bizarre to me. And what, so you know, if they are going to go back to the NWSL, which it looked like before, and certainly with Stoney leaving, it looks pretty, you know, definitely going to happen, then isn't that a bit of a bad way to start off your relationship with a new manager and a new club, just kind of blanking them for a few months and then turning up again?
I don't blame Tobin.
I don't blame them, but I just think it's strange.
The US Federation.
I blame the system. Kind
of, yeah,
more
I blame
than
the
I,
system, exactly.
I blame the system that enables that to happen. Because I know probably everyone does that, right? When you're a US Federation player, cause you don't need...
Well, I mean, Racing Louisville have Caitlin Ford's rights as well from Arsenal. Don't forget that. And Alana Kennedy.
True.
Anyway, before we get out of here, Flo, there's been so much managerial shifting in the FA Cup yesesterday. Manchester United lost 3-2 to Leicester City. Look at Leicester go up in the WSL and through to the next round of the FA Cup. That was Casey Stoney's last game in charge. Emotional words as she exited, Flo. I'm very proud of what we've built. These players need good resources. They need backing now. And I hope the club is going to do that. Flo, what are we seeing in the WSL in regards to all this managerial change? Carla Ward has handed in her resignation, might be on her way to Aston Villa as we predicted. Any Lukos left Aston Villa, obviously more of a general manager, sporting director than a manager. Rumours are she's heading out to the NWSL, possibly to Angel City. What is going on, Flo? And will we see more managerial turnovers?
Yeah, I think we will. I feel like there's something going on at Bristol City. So we maybe we'll see something there.
Calling it now.
Tanya Oxtoby is still on maternity leave, so I think she is due to come back, as you know, far as we're aware at the moment. But I don't know what's going on there. And I think the most frustrating thing was the Stoney departure, because obviously Carla Ward had sort of been hinting really for the last couple of months that she was leaving. She's been very vocal about how pissed off she is, and Stoney had been dropping hints as well. But you felt like there was more resolution to it because it's Manchester United. Whereas the Birmingham situation, that club is so chaotic that you felt like there wasn't necessarily going to be a resolution to this, because Birmingham are a bit of a sinking ship all round. And with Bristol and Birmingham, I'm like really thinking, how much longer can they hold on, really, in terms of just keeping afloat and just purely existing at this stage? But CEO at Birmingham has resigned, and I think he's been a big block in the chain across the men's and women's teams. So maybe it's the start of something new. But the Stoney stuff, yeah, she's been hinting about this throughout the season and then, you know, pulled the plug, and a lot more has come out since about just how bad the conditions were that she was fighting against. But it's also just embarrassing from a brand point of view, and that's what I don't get. You know, the fact that you had two of the most famous names in women's football coming to play with you, who sold the most shirts, I believe, of all the players at the club, and every single clip of them scoring a goal did basically a million views. Is it not embarrassing that they're going back to the States with a really crap experience of top tier English women's football, and they'll probably tell colleagues abroad, like, you don't want to go to United, or you don't want to go to that club, you don't want to go to this club? That's not good. And the fact that United don't even care about the risk of their brand just makes me think that they seriously underestimate the opportunity of women's football and how big it is just now, because they clearly think that they can just do this and it won't come back to bite them. Whereas actually, I fully respect Stoney for making that decision, because she's embarrassed them, and they deserve to be embarrassed. And it's just simply not good enough. I mean, imagine if they qualified for the Champions League with all that going on. I mean, what an achievement to make when, you know, the by the sounds of it, had showers to use. So,
I mean, I don't want to call you out as well, Flo, but like, it shouldn't really even be about they don't want to do this because it might damage their brand. They shouldn't want to do this because they deserve to give the women the same
treatment
as the men.
100%,
but that's support these athletes.
No, 100%, but that's what's even more kind of...
I know that's what you mean. Saying, like, it's funny to me that, like, it shouldn't have to be a transaction where it's like, we get them in, we boost the brand, we move on. It's like...
I mean is they don't care about reputational risk. Like, they're not treating these people well, and they don't even care about how that looks on them. They're so openly happy, so boldly happy to treat them like shit and not worry about the consequences. I think that's pretty embarrassing.
It's like, what's worse, not treating women the same or not caring about people knowing that you don't treat
them
the same?
Exactly. I mean, Birmingham have kind of just sort of accepted and shrugged that they're poor and shit, and sorry, that's just the way it's going to be. And, you know, Bristol City to an extent as well, it's kind of like, oh, well, we're in the championship in the men's division, so, you know, it's not going to be as good. But what is next level about United is it's all window dressing. It's like, oh, we're going to Old Trafford, this is going to be so cool, and all the players were so hyped for it. And then Casey Stoney was like, no, this is not good enough. So it's all those little things that from the outside looking in, you're like, wow, United really mean business. And then when you kind of peep behind the curtain and you see the truth, you're like, oh, shit, that's a mess. And I can't believe they invited some of the biggest names in women's football to come and witness this mess firsthand. I think that's embarrassing. They didn't think that, you know, this was... it's embarrassing that they thought that was good enough.
Well, look, we got to get out of here. You've got to go on BBC World Service to talk about women's football. So put that in your Manchester United brand's pipe and smoke it. Quick shout out before we do hang up the headphones. Congratulations to Charlton for making it to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Jess King scoring the winner against Blackburn Rovers. That's the real winner of the weekend. Jess King, wherever you are now the official player and team of Relatively Football in next year's, this year's FA Cup. We're going to be back in Charlton to make it to the Final Four. And that's it. Flo, anything else before I let you go? Good morning. Nice to speak to you in the morning for once, not on our Sunday time.
No, I think we chatted about a lot. So much has gone on in the past week, but wouldn't change it for the world.
Wouldn't change it for the world. All right, well, you'll see us in our matching Salmon and Bonner shirts very soon. There's always more football. And then we might take a little break, but who knows? I definitely want to get one more WSL Roundup pod in and maybe talk some Olympics. But otherwise, we'll see you very soon. Be well, be safe, be nice. And good morning, good evening, good night.